The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by 6 local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Bill Felker. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Vic. It's a beautiful day.
Bill, I think a lot of our listeners probably recognize your voice. Why is that?
Well, the Poor Will's Almanac, the weekly version, comes on every Tuesday here on WISO, and I love doing it. WISO is a wonderful place to be and talk to people and work.
Now, how is that Poor Will's Almanac different than this one that I'm holding here in my hand?
Well, the weekly radio versions focus on what is happening at that week in nature for the most part, whereas the 2017 version is tries to look ahead to the whole year, bring the whole year into focus. There is a section of the 2017 with small capsules of each of the what I call the 48 seasons of the year, and in a sense, that's a capsule of what might be on the radio in the Poor Will's Almanac for WISO, but it's different.
Mm-hmm. Poor Will's Almanac 2017, I think the ink is still wet on this thing. How long has this been out?
It's been out since the first week of September.
Okay. So the ink is just starting to dry on it.
Your hands are a little bit messed up there from petting it. But it's,
you're right.
Yeah, but it's dry, really.
So tell us about this project. How did it start, and How long has it been going on, and what keeps you interested in doing it?
Well, I think I've said on a number of occasions how my giving up of nicotine drove me to the woods and walking and obsessively taking notes. And so from that developed a weekly almanac in the Yellow Springs News, and that gradually spread to a few other papers. I'm not a great marketer, and so I didn't try to go too much further than a few of the places that I was able to get to or write to. But the annual almanac sort of was a logical conclusion of the newspaper almanacs, a logical extension. And it was a good way of kind of bringing things together, and it was a lot of fun. The first one came out in 2003, and I had one every year until 2012, and then I picked up again in 2015 and 2016, and now this is 2017. It's just fun to do, Vic. I ask myself a lot of times, why am I doing this?
Uh-huh.
And It's just a way of getting myself and my observations and my thoughts down on paper and kind of packaging them up and handing them out.
Bill Felker joins us. Poor Will's Almanac 2017 just came out. And Bill, we probably have a couple listeners out there who have never heard you on the radio. They've never read an almanac. They don't even know what an almanac is. What is an almanac?
Well, Poor Will's Almanac is similar to some of the standard almanacs out there in the world, like the Old Farmers, but it has a different focus. Most regular almanacs do have an almanac essay, like this one does, and they have astronomical information and weather information. Most almanacs have advertisements, which Poor Will doesn't. But what I try to do with the Poor Will's Almanac is to present a natural or a nature-based portrait of the year. And that sounds perhaps too obvious, but the idea of creating steps or phases of the year based on what happens in nature is hard to come by. People talk about the seasons. You can buy books about the seasons and so forth, but you can't really get a week-by-week overview of what happens in nature in this particular area. And what I try to do in the almanac is make what happens here in the lower Midwest applicable to the south or the east or going west quite a ways. I've had farmers in Wyoming, of all places, say that my weather forecasts are the only ones they trust. I couldn't believe it when I said it or when I heard it, but that's a fact. I had somebody just 2 days ago write me and say, I've got to have thyroid surgery. What's the best time to do that? And, well, I told him what the moon said, and that's all I could say. I said, get a good doctor, and say your prayers and relax. Think positively.
Would that be the new moon that you suggested?
Well, I was suggesting that he had have his surgery either between full and new moon on either end, right? So either as the moon enters its second quarter or its fourth quarter. That's traditional lunar lore, it's not original by any means.
You're giving advice in all different areas there. My guest is Bill Felker. His Poor Will's Almanac 2017 just came out. You mentioned the nicotine thing and how that avoidance of nicotine led to other pastimes. And wasn't a barometer also involved?
Well, yeah. Back in 1973, my wife gave me a barometer for Christmas, and I sort of bonded with it right away. I set it up so that the needle would move. They didn't have digital things, of course, back then. And lo and behold, I could graph it. And if anyone does that, and maybe I was different that way in that I became obsessed with graphing, but it's really fun. And you can tell when a high pressure comes through because the graph goes up. And when the low pressure is approaching, you can see it. And what was really interesting is how from year to year, the patterns were similar. And that's what the weather forecasts in this almanac are based on, that the world breathes in a relatively regular way. And so what happens with weather is that the graphs create a fractal pattern. And a fractal pattern is not an identical pattern. So you can't forecast exactly what the weather is going to be like. But fractals are self-similar patterns. And so, the equinox cold front was a little late this year, reaching here in Ohio, but it came on schedule pretty much. It's a little late. Okay, sometimes it's a little early, but you can kind of depend on that. I think most people who live in one place for a while kind of expect certain things to happen at certain times, but you can put it on graphs too. It's fun.
Yes, we had a kind of a hot September. In fact, we had kind of a hot, humid summer.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that the last 2 years have been some of the hottest years ever. Does this change any of these forecasts and predictions, this heat that some people say isn't really anything to worry about?
I think it's interesting from my perspective that the fronts continue to come through in their own fractal way, but the characteristics of the fronts can change. And, you know, we've had hot summers like this before and warm autumns. From a local standpoint, and, you know, my scientific center is my backyard, so, you know, I don't claim that it's in any way valid scientifically, but, you know, it appears that things have changed. I remember when I moved to Ohio in 1978, and this is a very anecdotal perspective, but the winters were awfully gloomy. And over the years, that's little by little changed. And so the winters in southwestern Ohio are much less dim and gray and gloomy.
Less cloud cover. Huh?
Yeah, less mm-hmm. cloud cover. And, you know, I think the jury is out on how all of these global temperatures affect your backyard. Mm-hmm. And that's why we need folks out there stopping smoking and obsessively taking notes, because right. unless you look, you don't see.
You take the long view. My guest is Bill Felker. When you're out of town, Bill, do you have somebody run over and look at your barometer for you and take measurements?
No. It's really wonderful traveling anywhere, because you can gauge where you are based on what the foliage is doing. I went up to Rochester, New York last week, and it's fun to watch. I left southwestern Ohio. Everything was green. And little by little by little, above Cleveland and then east, you could see the season gradually turning the leaves. By the time we got to Rochester, there was definitely a hint. We stayed there 2 days, and on the way back, in 2 days, the hillsides had turned into a really early autumn. Wherever you travel, you can see changes like that. And the cool thing is that what I saw in Rochester is going to happen here in southwestern Ohio next week. Uh-huh. It's cool. So you're watching time in space. Space is the key to time. And you can apply all of these things in the almanac to different places that way and say, oh, I just drove from late summer into early fall.
You have so many plants in this almanac. Are these all plants that you have learned by walking around outside to identify them?
Yeah, they are. They're all, since I'm based in southwestern Ohio, they're all from around where I live, and you can find them almost everywhere in the East Coast. I mean, it depends, east of the Mississippi. I don't know. I didn't count them. But there are a lot of them, and people say, well, you know, I go on a wildflower walk, and the guide, you know, points out this, that, and the other thing. And, of course, it's hard to remember that. And then you say, well, gee, that was fun, but I don't remember anything. But if you do it one by one, you know, first you quit your addictions, and then you've got to get out there. And then little by little, you say, oh, okay, my gosh, it's a trillium. What kind of trillium is it? Mm-hmm. And so suddenly you've made that your own, and then it goes on from there. And everybody can do a dandelion. That's good. So it's like having a life list of things, right?
Well, I like the way you have that feature in each month where you say if – the trout are running in – that's just a paraphrase.
Right,
if the trout are running in eastern Oregon, then the lilacs have just begun to bloom in southern Wisconsin, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. How do you put all that together?
I put it together, first of all, from the baseline that I used from my daily notes, which is, I don't know, 500,000 words or so, you know, all kinds of notes from different days. And then from travels I've made, not extensive travels, but and also from readings.
Okay.
So it's kind of fun to mix them up in a stew, mm-hmm. and say, well, you know, when frogs and toads are migrating in Indiana, then the horseshoe crabs are coming ashore in southern Georgia. Something like
right,
that, right?
Right. Uh-huh.
And you're putting together a stew which shows, in my opinion, shows how everything is connected and how you can apply one thing to another, because you're not even though this is totally parochial, you're not parochial because you can apply it to other places.
When we've gone through a long period of drought in the summer and it hasn't rained in weeks, and then we get a little rain and you get that scent of petrichor in the air, and you see all the toads are out.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about migrating toads, what do you mean when they migrate? Are they just migrating across the yard? How far do they go?
You know, I don't know. I've got notes that show that in my casual observation that I see more toads in August than September. And I, you know, every once in a while I think about these notes and I say, you know, I wonder if this is a coincidence. And so, you know, we've got the internet now. We can look that up. And indeed, frogs and toads are migrating at this time of the year. And apparently what they do is they find just the right place and they dig in. Mm-hmm. They dig into the soil and they stay there for the winter. So it's fun to find that the casual observations that you make just walking around indeed play out. You say, I wonder if such and such is true. And if you saw it, it probably is true. Now, what does that mean? Well, you know, what does a frog and toad migration mean?
Mm-hmm.
It means you're connected. You're watching. You're seeing what's happening around you. And, you know, if you don't, then you get the sixth great extinction, right? If you don't see it, you don't care about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't care about it, well, who cares?
Yeah. Well, the whole extinction theme, I don't even want to go there, but I hate digging in the yard in the winter. But sometimes you have to. Sometimes your cat died or you have some reason you have to go out there and dig. And on a number of occasions, I have excavated a toad down there and it just breaks my heart. I mean, I quickly put the dirt back, but I'm like, you know, it's not right. I've tampered with this toad's wonderful little underground cavern, and I hope that they make it. But, you know, here I've opened it up to the cold air. It shakes me up. And we have such an impact on nature all the time. And you have these wonderful little reader-contributed pieces that close out each month.
Mm-hmm.
And one in particular, I've got to admit, I was appalled by the woman who killed the rooster.
Those are pretty classic farm rooster stories. I don't know how many of those people have contributed. Sometimes it's a turkey. Sometimes it's an evil goose that chases the young child as he or she goes to the outhouse. And yeah, those birds always end up on the table.
You know, and they taste so good. Right?
They taste so good because they're, you know, this is the retribution.
Right. Yeah, you do have a good outhouse story in there, the one about the aunt that likes to smoke in the outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't even be giving these away. These are a real treat on the end of each chapter. How do you get them?
Well, I started doing the weekly almanacs in 1984. And the following year, I started asking for reader stories. And I don't know how many I've gotten through the years, at least in almost 1,000 probably. I've never really counted them all. But, yeah, people have all kinds of things to share. And outhouse stories are classics, and I'm hoping to put them all together into a collection this year, you know, the outhouse stories of Poor Will's Almanac, because they're really great Americana.
You've got that many of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be a heavy volume, but
wow.
I can probably put together 100. You know, that's a special.
That'll make for some great outhouse reading.
Well, yeah, you know, you just, well, people tell me they put Poor Will's Almanac in the bathroom, you know, hey, if you put the outhouse stories there, that'd be even better.
Truly. We're talking about Poor Will's Almanac 2017. Bill Felker put it together, and he has joined us here in studio, and many of you hear his voice on the radio here on WYSO, or maybe you read him in the newspaper, or maybe you read him in your ag journal. Aren't you published in a lot of different places, Bill? What are some of the places where you appear?
Well, most of the people in the Midwest who see my column see it in probably the major farm weekly that covers Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, Ohio, Michigan. It's called Farm World, and it's a thick weekly magazine, and it's carried me since 1985. I also write for Sheep Magazine, which is a lot of fun to do. Right? You know, I don't know much about sheep, but I do the research, and apparently, you know, all I have to do is to say, well, okay, this is lambing time, or you know, this is the time when once the day's length goes below 14 hours, well, then, you know, your ewe may begin to cycle. And so it's time for breeding. And there's all kinds of stuff that follows that, and that's all in the book. So you don't have to be an experienced shepherd to know that. But when you put that together with the sun and the moon and the planets and the weather systems, you can come up with something that's apparently useful. And it's been running since 1995.
The magazine's called Sheep Magazine?
Sheep exclamation point magazine.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Right? You know.
I like it. Because I write on deadline every week. I know how it feels.
Oh, I couldn't. I'm terrible at the last minute. A lot of people are good, but I've got to do a little bit every day. Otherwise, I go crazy.
I see.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard Poor Will's Almanac, it airs here on WYSO on Tuesday mornings around 6:30 and 8:30-ish, according to my producer here, Peter Hayes, who also helps produce Poor Will's Almanac, does he not?
He certainly does.
Yeah, so we're all very thankful to Peter for his fine ears here on WYSO. And we're thankful to you, our listeners, for your fine ears for tuning in. Bill, as I was reading the almanac, I'm always trying to apply it to my own life because I observe nature. I'm not like you, but I observe it, and I notice things. And I'd been wondering, because of this monarch butterfly situation, I've been wanting to plant milkweed. And so I keep my eyes open looking for milkweed and looking for the milkweed pods growing in ditches because I want to get some of the seeds. And I learned reading your almanac when I can do that. And there's so many helpful things in here, but I'm going to have to wait for a little while. I've been going by that milkweed every day, and they're still pretty green.
Yeah, the end of September in this area is usually the time that they start. But if I were you, I'd go out, you know, maybe in the middle of October, and you should be able to find them then.
Wait for them to pop open.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And then they're mature. They're
mature,
yeah.
Okay.
And you should have – it's kind of hard to get them started, but once they're started, they spread. So,
and what's your tip on getting them started? Do you start them inside early?
I start everything inside that I want to control, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the SAD that you have in this almanac. Tell us what that is.
Well, the seasonal affective disorder index is simply a way of quantifying what the weather is going to be like in general, what the cloud cover is going to be like, right, and the length of the day. So if you put those three things together, you know, take for example now in late September, the weather's pretty good. Yeah, it's nice and cool. And we're past equinox, and so, well, the day's length is getting shorter. So that's going to begin to affect some people. Right? And cloud cover, good usually at this time of the year. But you jump ahead a month, and suddenly it's cold and raw. And so that puts the numbers up on the weather. And it starts getting cloudier. November is a lot cloudier. So there goes some more numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And the day's length in November is almost the same as it is in December. So wham, in November you really get a load. And you can quantify that any way you want. So it's not rocket science, but it makes sense, right? It's say, whoa, if I use a scale of 1 to 75, and, you know, if I'm in the 60s, then you know that there's stuff going on out there that may affect you. not everybody has this, and some people say that seasonal affective disorder doesn't even exist. But, this is a way of measuring something that many people feel is useful.
I believe the Chinese invented it. Well, I'm just kidding. my guest is Bill Felker, and his book is Poor Will's Almanac. I have listened to you on the radio and read your work for a number of years, and I love that meditative, reflective quality that you bring to it, and you have these wonderful reflections that you include in your almanac. And I think one of my favorites, one that I read in this one, is the monks at Ellis Pond. I love that.
Yeah, that was really an exciting discovery as I went out to walk my dog out at this pond near Yellow Springs, where I live. And now, ordinarily, when I go out there, there are a lot of geese that live in the adjacent field. And very often at this time of the year, they're flying back and forth and they're chattering. Once the goslings are grown up, the geese start getting a little more active and their molting is over and so forth. And then one afternoon in the fall, I went out and I was just standing around with my dog because she doesn't move much. She's getting old. And I was watching the dog. And then out of the cornfield, maybe 100 yards away, comes a goose. And then another goose. And more and more and more geese. And they walk across, sometimes two by two. And it was an amazing sight. Well, they went single file to the edge of the water. And the lead goose looked down and kind of looked around and plopped in. Then the second goose came around, did the same thing. And lo and behold, the whole line of geese, I don't know how many there were, at least 100 geese, did the same thing as though they had drilled this, as though they had disciplined themselves. And I had just come back from a retreat in Gethsemane in Kentucky, where I had watched monks filing in and out of one place or the other in silence. And it just struck me that these geese must be monastic ganders or something. I mean, I don't know what to... anyway, it just, the similarity struck me. And, of course, you know, we're all from the same pool, so... Mm-hmm.
My guest has been Bill Felker. We've been talking about Poor Will's Almanac 2017. If listeners are trying to locate a copy of this, where would they look if they wanted to find one?
This is the first year I'm on Amazon, Vic, so you can go to Amazon.com and look up Poor Will's Almanac with a K and purchase that way. Or you can go to my website, poorwillsalmanac.com, all one word, almanac with a K, and you can order there, and I'll autograph your copy for you and get it off priority mail the next day.
Thanks, Bill. It's always a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to talk with you, Rick.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes.